Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Recent figures published by the National Treatment Purchase Fund show that there are around 90,000 children currently on public waiting lists for treatment in Irish hospitals, and GPs, paediatricians and charities such as Inclusion Ireland are saying that they're deeply concerned about the effect these delays are having on vulnerable children. Evelyn O'Rourke has been talking to people across the medical community and the families to find out more, and Evelyn is here now. Good morning, Evelyn.
Good morning, Claire.
So remind us first of all the situation on public waiting lists for children.
Well, the National Treatment Purchase Fund, Claire, they publish monthly figures, and those most recent figures, which cover the period until May 13th, show that there are 82,264 children on the outpatient waiting list and 7,698 waiting for an inpatient or a day case procedure. That means as well that there's 37,000 children on the outpatient list who've been waiting 12 months or more to be seen. Now, figures also show, and I know there's a lot of figures here and we will kind of move on from that in a minute, but just to give you a sense of where we're coming from, they say there's another 5,000 children on other public waiting lists. But the Irish Hospital Consultants Association, the IHCA, say that there are a further 8,000 waiting scans that are not recorded in those figures. So they are putting the figure in excess of 100,000 children. However, we have to say those figures for May run up to the 13th of the month because, of course, the hospitals were unable to file data to the NTPF after that date due to the cyber attack on the NHSE.
Now, you've been talking, Evelyn, to some of the people who are concerned about the waiting list. And the first person we're going to hear from is a paediatrician. And this paediatrician has a special interest in disability and rehabilitation.
That's right. Dr. Erwin Gill is based in CHI Temple Street Children's Hospital. And he says that he spends much of his time in appointments with families listening to their worries about the gaps in the services and supports for their children. And he says that the system for assessing children's needs in the first place, which is where all this starts off, is technical and can be inconsistent. And we will talk about that assessment of need again at another time. But in short, once children get assessed, they're then entitled to different services, but there can be delays. And he says he's seen the impacts that delays are having on his patients and that we need to commit to resourcing our hospitals, filling in consultant and therapist gaps. He says that his patients, he has patients whose development is hampered by the delays. But Claire, he's also full of praise for his colleagues and the hospital teams, but he is frustrated at the system, he says, not the people as such, that leads to these delays, saying some patients are waiting years and he thinks we've accepted these delays as normal. So here Dr. Gill tells me a little bit more about the experiences and the stories he hears in his clinic.
What I see in my clinic on a weekly basis, we meet families who tell us that when they've gotten through the assessment process, which can often take an extremely long time, what they're told is that in terms of the waiting time to actually get help, therapy for their children. In North Dublin, I've had children in my clinic the last few weeks who've been told they must wait over 3 years for that kind of intervention. So to put that in context, that means that a child who is referred at the age of two won't get any help whatsoever from disability services until they're in school, which is essentially as good as no service at all. And to put this in context, in other countries in which I've worked, in the UK and in Australia, it wouldn't be unusual to expect a child to be enrolled in early intervention perhaps within 3 or 4 months of having been referred, whereas here it's 3 or 4 years. So I think a lot of this has become very normalised. We've gotten very used to children with disabilities having to wait for everything, and I think people have lost sight of the fact that this is not the way that most countries do it. It's not normal at all, nor is it acceptable, and I think it reflects a level of comfort with it that we shouldn't have. We've gotten very, very focused in this country on the headline issue of assessment times being the thing that's the most important, and we've lost track of the fact that the intervention with therapy teams is what actually makes a meaningful difference. And the families who I see here in clinics who are waiting for years with no help whatsoever are often distraught. I can see that children don't get those early years back. We have a meaningful window in the early years with children to intervene and to get them in with expert therapy. Criticisms of waiting times, from my perspective, is not criticisms of the people who are actually providing the therapy, it's criticism of the system.
In terms of you working with your colleagues, it must be deeply frustrating then.
We do what we can. Part of the work obviously is advocating, so we will write our letters to say this patient has been, you know, they're back to see me again for the second time in 6 months or 9 months or a year or however long it's been. Ultimately, there's only so much therapy time or so much intervention time to go around, and you know, we write these letters because we feel we have to do something. But ultimately speaking, if the system isn't resourced to provide timely intervention, it doesn't matter what letters we write. Is the truth of it that the system is not set up for success? That can be incredibly frustrating. It certainly can, yeah.
That's Dr. Erwin Gill there, paediatrician from CHI Temple Street Children's Hospital. Now, some GPs have been vocal about their concerns with the delays, Evelyn, and you spoke to the Deep End group of GPs and they're speaking out about this. Will you tell us more about the Deep End group?
Yeah, it's a great name, isn't it? GPs at the Deep End is a group of general practitioners and they are working in some of the most disadvantaged communities in Ireland, and they say that when it comes to matters like delays and waiting lists, their patients are much more badly affected than patients who can access private supports, for example. Now, Professor Susan Smith is a GP in Inchicore in Dublin 8, but she's also a professor of general practice in the RCSI, the Royal College of Surgeons. And here Professor Smith outlines the concerns of Deep End for vulnerable paediatric patients.
Deep End is a group of GPs working in disadvantaged communities, and the first Deep End group started in Scotland, in Glasgow, and we heard about them. We were already kind of networking informally as GPs working in those areas, and then we formed a group called Deep End Ireland. So we're linked to lots of other Deep End groups internationally, and our main aim is to try and advocate, to try and ensure that services are based on need rather than on your ability to shout loudest or pay.
But at this point then, what are you looking for? Like, what is the clear advocacy line from Deep End in terms of this issue?
So we've been really concerned about waiting lists for services for disability and for mental health for children. And we work as GPs in disadvantaged areas, and it really affects those communities much more. That's for two reasons. Firstly, children are more likely to have needs in those communities. And secondly, there isn't really the escape valve of private services. So, for example, in one of the more affluent community health organisations in Ireland, there's about 370 children on a waiting list for speech and language therapy, and then in the more disadvantaged community health organisation it's 2,800. So there's an eightfold difference in the number of children waiting. The other thing that's been happening has been a huge focus on assessment, and that's welcome, but the difficulty is that it's all about assessment now, and really assessment without intervention has very little meaning for a child, and we are really advocating for major reform. There's a new system called Progressing Disabilities, which is seeking to address the challenges around assessment of need and the long waiting times for it. And in doing that, imbalancing the system further towards assessment and away from intervention. From a GP perspective, we feel we should be more involved in planning. Everybody says, go to your GP when you've any problem. And yet, we're not brought in enough in terms of planning services. And we are the first port of call for many of these families. And we know it's happening, so we should plan to do something about it.
So we're getting the message really clearly there, Evelyn, that assessment is one thing, but
yes,
actually getting the services that you need is a completely different ballgame. And that's where the problem seems to lie from both those speakers. And that was Professor Susan Smith. Now, you've also been hearing from organisations working with families to offer support, so filling the gap, in other words. And they're concerned about the delays too, obviously.
Yes, Claire, I mean, so many involved in this. And I spoke to Inclusion Ireland, which is the National Association for People with an Intellectual Disability, and they support members to take part in decisions that are about them. And they campaign, of course, for their members too. And they're worried about, again, like we've heard before, the impact that the delays are having. They say families are really frustrated and the children's development is being impacted, and they're advocating for more support from government to help address the issues. So here Mark O'Connor, Community Engagement Manager at Inclusion Ireland, tells me more.
It's something we've been concerned about for quite a number of years, and we've been highlighting it. What it really requires is additional bodies on the ground, so speech therapists, occupational therapists and psychologists to assess children, and that's something that needs to be provided to the HSE by government. So the minister at present has a report, I think it's the Minister for Health has it. It was originally Simon Harris that had it commissioned, and that was looking at the capacity within disability services. So we'd ask that that report is published, because what it does is it highlights what the need for therapeutic supports are for these children. And what families are telling us is that they're quite often put on a waiting list for early intervention. So early intervention teams operate until a child is about 5 or 6, and then they transfer on to the school age team. We've had lots and lots of parents tell us that they're never seen by the early intervention team, and they simply transfer on to the school age team. So the HSE can only grant the child access to services that they currently have. So if they haven't had funding for a certain service level, it can't be provided as quickly as one would desire it to be.
What do you think is going to happen, Mark?
We'd have to acknowledge that the current Minister for Disability Issues, Anne Rabbitt, has made funding available. You know, we haven't seen the figures yet, but a certain amount of funding has been put towards assessment of needs to clear the backlog. There is a HSE policy in this area, Progressing Disability Services for Children and Young People. So they're currently working through that backlog, which is really good to see. But what we would ask, and where the solution to this lies, is for the publication of the capacity review. That will indicate the amount of therapists that are required. But about 3 years back, the National Disability Authority looked at this. They determined that the system was in the region of 350 to 450 therapists too few. It's more people that are required. It's a provision that government would need to make.
Mark O'Connor from Inclusion Ireland there. And Evelyn, finally spoke to a family caught up in the waiting list situation. Introduce us to Danielle Fogarty.
Danielle Fogarty is the mum of six-year-old Cree, who she says is a gorgeous little boy that, of course, she loves him so much. But she's had to go through the assessment of need process with him. And she's been given an assessment of, and the phrase that she was given was likely autism, which she finds a little confusing. But she's upset because she says her son is really struggling. And she now has a list of recommended services for him, from occupational therapy to a referral to CAMHS for psychological support. But she has been told that the waiting list for services is up to 30 months. So here, Danielle tells me a little more about her son's situation.
Cree went down on these waiting lists back in 2019 when I first started all this. Now it says that there's a 30-month waiting list since June of 2020. So I reckon another 2 years before the school age team can give Cree any type of help. He needs psychology, he needs speech and language therapy, and he needs occupational therapist. This is what the recommendations on the report have. He won't walk really anywhere. Like, I still have a buggy for him.
But all of those involve a waiting list.
Yeah, we're just at a standstill now, and I just have to wait. He struggles, repetitive movements, mimicking, attention span, not being able to sit on the seat for long. Cree has a blocked bowel, and they say it's linked in with the autism. So he's on Movicol every day for that.
How do you feel about the waiting list situation?
Oh, it's absolutely shocking. Like, they said it was 30 months last year. It's probably gotten longer now with COVID. He can be very aggressive. He doesn't mean it. It's just he struggles really with his emotions and stuff. Like, he's not a great eater, so I feel like I have to argue with him or fight with him to eat. He sleeps, but he rocks during the night.
Do you believe that if he got supports and services, that it would help him?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, COVID didn't help either, but I've seen big, big changes in him, even down to trying to get him out to school in the morning can be very difficult. And if he had some help and support that we could even incorporate it at home, it would be really good. But I just feel like I'm now at a standstill unless I pay for it myself. And don't get me wrong, he's the best little boy, but it's big money and he needs psychology, he needs speech and language, and he needs occupational therapy. Which one do you choose that you think he needs most?
Danielle Fogarty there. And Evelyn, you've been in touch with the HSE and Children's Health Ireland, and they've issued a short statement to you today.
That's right, Claire. The statement's issued from Children's Health Ireland, and it says that CHI regrets it is unable to meet the demand for access to our services. The current impact of the cyber attack is not helping with children getting access to services. Several initiatives are under consideration with the HSE to invest in specific clinical initiatives to improve access to care. CHI apologises to patients and families who are experiencing long waiting times.
And we thank you, all those families this morning who are listening to this. Evelyn, thank you very much indeed. Evelyn O'Rourke. Now, coming up next, what's it like to visit Madrid these days? We'll find out after the break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.